was asked by a number of Talmidim to give shiurim on halachas of nida. I would say 5 weeks of sessions. We're just starting today for the next 5 Sundays, including today, we'll be discussing Hilchos Nida, and we'll try to divide it into 5 pieces. So we should be Noach Lashomim. Today we'll discuss how a woman becomes a Nida. Mishnah next we'll discuss how a woman gets out of the status of Nida. It's a more logical part of the discussion. The following week we'll talk about the Mitzvah, about Vestas, which is very important in terms of Grish and Medica, etc. And then the week after that we'll talk about our Harkokos, how they couple conduct themselves when she is in the status of Nida, and other things which don't fit into any particular category of Kaloy or Ledes, and these kinds of dinim. And the fifth and final week we'll talk about the laws of Tevila. Chatzitza, you know, Tevila Mimik. That's the plan. Whether it will work, I don't know. I just wanted to say that this year is open to questions. The whole point of this year is if you have questions, they should ask. And lo abai shalomei, I'll try to answer them if I can. I'd like to begin by giving an introduction to the entire topic of Nida. The entire topic, I should really say, of relationships between husband and wife, in particular the physical relationship between a man and a woman. And my introduction is based upon another introduction, not mine, but rather the Yaakov Melisa, author of the Kol Chayim, and Pesach, and other very distinguished works, has an introduction to Shir HaShirim, which is printed in the back of the Mikros Gedolos by Yikra, in which he describes the Shir HaShirim, quotes the Ramban in his introduction, their introduction. Spoke about Apokarsim. Apokarsim, who are interested in Tavas Olam Hazeh, and they interpreted Shir HaShirim literally, the Asim Imenu Shir HaGovim, Yimach Shemov, end quote. That's quite a statement. And those who understand the Shir HaShirim in a literal sense, the X-rated is pornographic. So those who did so, the Ramban writes about them, Yimach Shemov. What's the real interpretation? Of course we know that Shir HaShirim is a mushal. The nimshal is the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. Hashem being the chosen, as it were, and the Kalei Yisrael being the Kalei. Of course, the problem is, how do we separate in our minds one from the other? So the Rabbi Yaakov Melisa writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a person straight, so that all his actions should be done with Kedusha v'Tahara, also as Adam Yoshar, with Bitu Kol HaGashmiyah. And even when these acts of Gashmias are done, they do Mas and Gashmiim, it's not for the purpose of Tav of Gashmi. It's not the purpose. It's done with Dusha, Vitara. And the entire idea of Tav of Gashmi is only there, Leot, Le'ezer, Le'sad, La'tova, Kedusha. Etzel Ezer Kenegdo is Nimshal Atava Chomris, which means that the physical drive is an Ezer, is an help. In order for a person to do something which is important for the world, for the Kiyum Ma'olam, the Kodesh Baruch created this idea of physical attraction from man to woman and vice versa. What's the problem? Everything so far is great. What's the problem? ובעוונותינו הרבים הרשיעו אנשים עד שנשארו רק על הטבע החומץ לבד. וכאילו לא נברו רק לזה כי הציעו את הבהמס, and they're worse than בהמס. But it's an Easter of Losino, and all kinds of other Averis, so it's worse than a behemoth. They took something that they could have put into the Bria, because it's necessary as an important prerequisite for Kiyama Olam. He doesn't quote it over here, but the Gemara tells us in the Sefer Sanhedrin, that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, when they came back in the second base of Mikdash, they saw that the Jews were still bound down to idols. They prayed to Hashem that the whole first base of Mikdash was destroyed because of idols, and now you come back after 7 years, it's still idols. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to their prayers and eliminated the Eitz Hara for Avodah Zarah. So we don't have it today. They saw it was an Eitz Rasa. So they prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to eliminate the Eitz Hara for Arayas as well. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened. The Eitz Hara for Arayas was eliminated. But the problem is that takes away from the entire system. There's an entire intricate system built into creation, which is tied up with the Eitz Hara for Arayas. So much so that the Gemara says they couldn't find a fresh egg for 3 days because the whole system within the whole animal kingdom was completely knocked out of kilter, out of whack by the elimination of the Eitz Hara. So then they sent HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make a deal. The deal should be that the Eitz Hara should be there for a mitzvah to be eliminated for an aveirah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's no deal. That's the fine tune that so much that I'm not willing to do. But what I will do is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara says so, is to eliminate the Eitz Hara for the absolute arayat in a strict sense. We're going to read about 2 weeks, which is the krovot, the incestuous relationship that Eitz Hara was eliminated. I have a kashya from Bizman Hazen. There's no kashya. I mean, people can go ahead and they can create Eitz Hara out of nothing. But the Eitz Hara which existed, which we read about in the Talmud Tanakh, apparently that was eliminated. But there's still plenty of Eitz Hara left. Not only for the Dvar Mitzvah, but for Averis. The two primary Averis that are left, two or three, for the Jewish male. The Jewish man is number one, Nida, which we're discussing today. Number two, Eitz Ish. Number three, Nachris, a non-Jewish woman. Three biggies. So that's left, but that's not Krovo. That's not relatives, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did eliminate. So this is what, we see that this Azer, go back to the Rav Melissa. The Azer is necessary for the world to exist, and therefore this Yom Tahara was built into creation and cannot be eliminated. So the problem is, how do we look at this thing? How do we look at this relationship, this physical relationship? So in the world outside, we look at it as being dirty, because that's how it's portrayed. But in reality, right, Rav Melissa, it's not so. And he gives a beautiful mushroom. The Namashal is ever Migdal Shem Malachon, Vinoy Tavnison is Alal Kol. Vishumto Viofi Malachal on Erech Elo. The Aden Gan Maldama Elo Viofi. It's a beautiful, beautiful Migdal, a tower, a palace, which existed, which nothing could compare to in its beauty. What happened? This was far away, presumably. Not everybody could see it. So therefore, what happened? A man came along and he made a beautiful picture. Tzir na mahuda. V'anira b'tziro ki'ilu mamesh b'anil talpiyo. V'kula mayolom zem imenu no binyan amigdal. Av shen anira lehen. V'kula olam mayonan imi no binyan amigdal mitzir anira. He printed it on paper, but the whole world, I guess it was put into museums and it went around the world. And everybody's able to see this incredibly beautiful amigdal. Those who cannot reach the remote islands where the amigdal was in fact built. What happened? A man came along and he dirtied, he vandalized this picture in the museum. He made it look disgusting. And it was impossible for individuals to perceive properly the beauty of the palace. It was mold to stack a lot of tears. But you laugh at the mashab, so I had another mold. Because when a person would see the picture, just to think about it, would conjure up the image of the filth, of the scrolls, the graffiti that was painted on it, the profanities that were painted on the picture. They didn't have the graffiti removers we have today. So that this, forever and ever, that picture, wherever it was found, had on it this terrible addition of vandalism which was put on by the perpetrator of evil. And then the result of this ומתוך כך נמאס מלך את בני המגדל במחשב את האדם. כי כאשר היה מאס מלך של במחשב את בני המגדל, עולה רעיון המיוס עציר. So not only the person in his own mind's eye, when he thought about the picture, think about the terrible scroll, profanity that was put on by the vandal. But even they just have to think about the actual Mizzle and the remote island. They rather in their mind to think about what their association. That beautiful building, that building was drawn by a person in the beautiful picture in the museum. That picture in the museum was vandalized and had smut on it. So when I try to think about the beautiful palace and the island, my first thing is to think about the vandals, what they wrote on the picture which is in the museum. Much was beautiful. There's Rav Yaakov Melissa, okay, and then she'll be in. And these kinds of things. Dvorim HaKadoshim, 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 Nimshalu B'Dvorim HaKadoshim. That the idea of the relationship, the physical relationship between Ish V'Isha is the highest of the high. V'chasher Kamo HaRishon, she Nimshalu K'Behemos Nindu, V'Shchisu Torah HaMoshel. And then they came along and they were promiscuous and they were involved in their lust, their drive, they're involved in all kinds of immorality and perversion. So what happened? They destroyed the Torah HaMoshel. Nishchat Beinehem Mare Torah HaNimshol. So that now, when a person thinks in his own mind's eye of the relation between man and woman, he doesn't think about the beauty and the loftiness, the nobility, the sanctity, which originally was invested by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As an Ezer Kenegdo, as an intrinsic part of the beauty of creation, as it was, as we know, before the case of Adam Chava, Elohim Moshashim, when there was an individual who engaged in this particular part of physical life, as they engage in other parts, the person eats and drinks, and if he doesn't L'Shem Shemayim, it's a mitzvah, it doesn't to be ashamed of that. That's how it was originally. After the Chet HaKadmon had changed, and now we have a certain measure of shame, which should exist. Unfortunately, in the outside world, that shame has disappeared. Today, if Rav Yaakov Lisa would be alive today and see what goes on, it's not what happened in Lisa in 180 years ago. Things have changed since then, dramatically. So now it's completely no shame in society in which we live. And as a result of that, the entire matter of Ben Ish L'Ishto has become a subject of pornography and of shame. Because individuals, the human beings have come and destroyed its pure and noble image, HaKadosh Baruch Hu used it, created it, and the proof is that he used that as a marshal between himself and Klal Yisrael. That's Shira Shira with Kodesh Kodashim. That's the marshal of this relationship. And in the pure sense, the perfect marshal. Unfortunately, when we think of this relationship between men and women, so we're proud about what we hear on the radio, what we, maybe some people see on television, or movies, or magazines. Everything is just purely centered around the lust and the terrible, terrible priestess, frivolity, immorality, etc. So now you're going to say, well, that's the relationship that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in Israel. Crazy. Yeah, it's like the vandal who made graffiti all over the picture so we can't think back to the original palace. It's hard enough to think back to the original palace that we never saw, especially someone who's married. Not married, I never saw it really. He just knows about it. What do you read about in the books? The books are filled, pure filled. He has no idea what this relationship is all about. So how can he go compare Kadosh Baruch Hu and Israel to this relationship? Crazy. So all the four of those individuals who vandalize this beautiful institution. That's the Hakdama of Rabbi Yaakov and Yisrael Shira Shirim. I think it's very important that we give this Hakdama before embarking upon this kind of a limud. And I should really add, as part of the limud, we're going to leave out completely. Not the limud of Nida, which we'll try to cover again, not exhaustively. You can't do it in a quick session. You can't learn all of them neither, which is almost very deep and very involved, very detailed. We'll try to cover the major parts of Hilchos Nida, but there's another component part of Ben Ish L'Ishto, which is called Hilchos Tzniut, the sound of Eben Ha'ezer and Ara Chaim. And I feel it's inappropriate that we discuss this in front of this group, so I'm not going to discuss it. I've had cases of the Chosin come to me today at the Chasna, the night before. I discussed it with a husband, privately, that I'm happy to do. But it's not appropriate to discuss that. But remember, that's a critical component of these matters as well, and in many ways even more critical than the halachos of Nida, in the perspective of how the marriage is conducted, in the most general term. Of course, in terms of the specifics of avoiding Yisurim, so this Hilchos Nida has a priority, which we'll be discussing right now. I should add one more thing. People get all worried and concerned about Hilchos Seder. It's so difficult, and how am I going to handle it? I've told many people, and I stand on record, Hilchos Shabbos is much more difficult. Much more difficult. There's no comparison. Much more involved, much more lengthy, much more detailed, much more difficult to grasp. I don't find people coming to run really on the Shir Nechos Shabbos, and then so why is that? Compared to people used to be Mechal Shabbos in their earliest youth. But this Sadute, I don't want to say that in a literal sense, but I'm trying to bring out it that the Shabbos, if people keep Shabbos, like, you know, like the servant else keeps Shabbos, it doesn't keep Shabbos, they know, they don't know. Where this matter of Hilchos Seder is something which becomes new to a person when he becomes a chassan and he gets married, something which is new. Something which is new, so that's all, oh, new. You have to study it now, you haven't learned it before. So therefore, something which a person gives an extra special measure of attention to, which is fine, which to give the same attention to Hilchos Shabbos and other halachos as well. But there's another dimension. Hilchos Seder involves two people. It involves a husband and it involves a wife. And as a result, we have to emphasize the very act of the laws of tznius, of modesty. Laws of tznius and modesty dictate that these matters, which are beinu, between husband and wife, remain that way. Remain between husband and wife. And are not topics of the street, Chas v'Shalom, as the goyim would have it. But rather, and are not topics for friends and relatives and things of this nature. No. The one exception is when a shayla has to be asked by a rov. And the role of a rov in Hilchos Seder is very special and unique. And if you want to look at a nice exposition of this uniqueness, I recommend you look at the introduction of Rabbi Shimon Ayer, the beautiful Sefer of Hilchos Seder. The first volume at the beginning, he describes why the rov's role is special and unique in this area of halacha. And I'm not sure if he does that, makes a comparison, but I would compare it to that of a patient and a doctor. A patient has a certain particular problem, and he has to go to, she has to go, as a case may be, to a physician to analyze the medical problem. There's a certain sense of discomfort and embarrassment. It's true. Can't deny it, especially if it involves the inner parts of the private parts of the body. But that's the way it is. Yeah, if you need a doctor to take care of your ailment, so be it. So the same thing is true of a rov. If someone has a shayla by a rov, you have to go to the rov. The rov is, as we know, is the rov and nefesh, but he's also involved in matters of guf. What's this parasha called? No, what's it called, the parasha? So what does that mean? The person had a negat taras went to a kohen. If a woman had a negat taras, and the negat taras was in a place which ordinarily was covered, which is the likelihood, so the kohen would have to see whether anybody had a thing. Perhaps the Lord of Tznius. The answer is the Lord of Tznius was maintained properly, and the Kohen saw what he had to see, and he was able to put it out of his mind. He didn't discuss it with everybody else, and as a result of that, the Lord of Tznius was maintained. The same thing is true with Kavah Chomer and Hilchos Seder, where there's no need for the rabbi to see any part of the woman's body. You know, there's certain Maros Dama, who gets a little bit later on, and for another shilas of questions in the law, which means, the rabbi is going to know what my private situation is, if I'm teres labal or asur labal. All right, that's true. But if you deal with the rav is discreet and is proper modesty and tzniut himself, then it doesn't go any further. So the rav knows that certain thing is up, okay? There's nothing wrong with that, as long as the relationship is a proper one. There are some individuals who say, I can't ask the shayla, I'm going to just go to chumra all the time. I'm not going to ask the shayla, it can only be machmir all the time. That is a grievous error, a terrible mistake. Chumras are inappropriate in this area of halacha because it's a chumra which may be the nekulam. The rule in all chumras, but especially in this area of halacha, if the couple is too machmir, could lead to work on the negatives. No need to elaborate upon what the negatives are right now. Negatives in the literal sense of negatives and the elimination of certain positives, and therefore the result of that, we don't follow any chumras, we'll be following chulas. If you have a shayla, go to a rov, and ask the shayla. If a person is very embarrassed, there's a possibility of asking the shayla anonymously. I've got many, many anonymous shaylas. I have some regular anonymous callers. Remember me, I'm the one who, I still have no idea who they are. They call me, you know, and I just don't know, and I answer their questions. Some questions you really can't answer if it's, you know who you're talking to, but many of the questions are not so difficult. I answer them called to a sense of Shofanara, because I don't know who they are. Because they prefer to remain anonymous. They call me from Brooklyn. called, that's called, he's from Brooklyn. The shortage of Rabbanim in Brooklyn. But I guess they want a Rabbi they don't know, and they want to deal with it anonymously, and I do have a call right now. So they call me. Okay, fine. I have no objection. It's a wonderful thing. Someone in my community wants to call someone in Brooklyn, so tell all that wrong. I don't mind. And these are issues of how a person feels about this. There's no need for all this stuff. People are oversensitive. They won't go to a doctor who they may know also. Okay, I can understand that also. Let's go back to our Indian. The Shulchan Aruch said in Kuf Pei Gimel, describing how a woman becomes a nida in terms of detail. We have an Asher, we found the Ramah's opening statement before the Mechaber, before we even read the Mechaber, Ben Chiluk, Ben Tnuyul, Nesuul, and it's a nida. He called Ramah a nida chayav korah. Another very important comment. That there's no distinction between a woman who's single and married with respect to the Lord of Nida. Anyone who has beer with a Nida is Chai of Koretz. A Nida, of course, means any individual who has experienced Nida, so a female experienced Nida, and hasn't gone to the mikveh yet. The Lord of the mikveh will get to at the very end. Why does the Ramah say there's no distinction between Pnuy and Hetzishis? Isn't that obvious? It should be obvious. So in the end, given by the Mefarshim, it's based on a Gemara and the Sechs the Nida, which is also critical to our understanding of the whole Tamadikra, if you will. The Torah gives reasons. The Gemara gives reasons for the Sukkim. It doesn't mean if the reason doesn't apply, the law doesn't apply. That's exactly the point of the Ramah. But the reason is the reason anyway. And that is, why does the Torah give us the laws of Nida? Because after all, the Gemara says, if, quote an English expression, familiarity breeds contempt, if there's a constant a physical relationship between man and woman, so it can lead to it becomes a stale relationship, ultimately a contemptible relationship, and then our Kadosh Baruch Hu, with his infinite wisdom, decided that this kind of a physical relationship has to have a period of time when it stops. And that's why, according to Chazal, he introduced the concept of Nida. This is the Gemara, and the Laman Aleph is based on the Sefer Nida, Tanya Rameh Omer. That's exactly it. Familiarity means contempt, literally. Rogloba Kotzva. Amra Torah Tehei Tumei Oshiva Yomim Kadesh Techaviva Albala Kishas Knisoso Lechupo. When she comes back from the mikvah, she is beloved to her husband, as in her wedding night. This is a Gemara in Nida Lamed Aleph Mabei, the fascinating Gemara. And therefore the Ramon says, oh, Gevaldik. So as long as the woman's not married, there's no reason either. So there's no need of Kadisa Lechupa. There's not a Chazal interest in the Torah, that they should be familiar and should be happy with each other. You might have thought there's no need of Nida. Come to Ramon tells him, don't be so smart. Even though maybe the reason for the Pasuk, the dinner part, even the reason does not apply. Okay. Let's go back to the Shulchan Aruch and start the actual difficulties. Isha Shiyotah Dami Matorah. What is the Mokka? The Mokka is translated in our terminology as the uterus. You know what a uterus is? It's the womb, it's the place where the a baby is able to be gestated for 9 months, that's where the baby is. And this womb, or uterus, has a lining which waxes and wanes. When the lining sheds, that's at the beginning of the Dam Nida. And then the lining begins all over again, and at the time of practicing, the woman goes to mikvah. At the peak time, it is called ovulation, usually in a normal situation, when the woman ovulates, that's when there's an egg comes through the fallopian tubes and into the area of the uterus, and that's where the Zera HaBaal can fertilize the egg, and the baby can in fact create it if the hormone levels are right, and that's how the lining forms, holds on to the Zera. That's, in a nutshell, the biology. So the Dam comes to Mimikora, Bein Ba'onet, Bein Barotan, Tumeya. Anyway, it comes out that Dam is considered to be Tumeya. Notice the word Tumeya. The word Tumeya has been unfortunately misinterpreted and has caused great grief in the Jewish world. Tumeya has been very often rendered as somehow dirty or unclean or something of this nature. And there were those who say, oh, Lord of Nida. Well, yeah, of course, they didn't have proper hygiene. But today, when we can take a shower, hygiene, there's no need to keep the laws of the ridiculous. The word Tumeya has an ethnic part. The word Tumeya means that it's something which has ritual impurity, true, and even though there's another prohibition involved as well, the Torah often uses the expression tameah. For example, just had that discussion about what's kosher, what's not kosher, in terms of eating. But yet the Torah describes it often as in the Pesukim as tameah, because there's a din of tumah in certain cases, which is involved with some of these animals. And therefore it's called tamei, you know, so also we might use the expression of also. So too, in this upcoming week of Shatriya Mitzorah, the Parsha Mitzorah, there's a lengthy description of these individuals, of these Dove, and mind you, applies to Dove and Valkyrie as well, the gender blind, be careful today's world, should be sued, that these laws of ritual purity and impurity apply to men and to women, in their respective states of ritual impurity, and that's called tamei. So that expression Shemeo is carried on ritual impurity is found in Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam as well. But today, this idea of Tumah is basically irrelevant. We don't go on the Beit HaMikdash even if we're not when we're all Shemei based. You can't go get the Korban and can't go to Beit HaMikdash. So what's relevant to us primarily today is not the written Parsha of Torah, but it's rather written in the next Parsha, Achim HaSkadosh, we're talking about the Easter Nida, the Easter Zava, which is a prohibition like any other prohibition. It's an Easter. And all kinds of Easter has nothing to do with cleanliness or uncleanliness, which is the incorrect translation of Tumah. And today it's not even the Tumah which is relevant. It's really the Easter, which is a related to the Tumah. We love this. How exactly does the relationship go? We're not going to go into that. Bottom line, for us, it's really Easter of the head. That's why we're ordained. And so for us, when it says Tumah, we really want to use the word Asura. Tumah is using the Gemara and the Rambam to describe the status with respect to ritual impurity. And perhaps the reason was exactly so. One might argue that the reason why the expression Tumeya was used by the Rambam and by the Gemara before is because in order to cover up on the contribution of Tzniyus, we don't want to speak about too much about the man-woman relationship. We use the word Tumeya. Tumeya has relevance even if the woman is not married, if she's single. In the old days when there was a problem of Tumah V'Tahara, so a woman who was in Nida, she was single, she would also promise Tumah V'Tahara, what she touched became ritually impure. And it didn't have that much to do specifically with man and woman relationship. It was like, whatever Tumah that a person had for whatever reason, they have to deal with that Tumah. The person goes to a Levaya, Tumah Meis, and they're a Paraduma, nothing to be embarrassed about. They just Tumah. So to the Lachas of Nida, the Lachas of Vitzorah, whatever these things were. There were laws of ritual purity and impurity trying to be dealt with as such. Perhaps that's the reason why the word Tumah was used in the original classical sources. What I said before, today, it's relevant specifically for Bein Ish L'Ish, though, so we would think the word Asur would be more appropriate. Here comes the big line in the Shulchan Aruch. V'hu shetargish v'shipiti yasa. Dvar Torah v'doraisa is only a din of Nida when there is what we call hargosha. The pasuk of the Psara, Parsha and the Gemara Dash Asher Tavish Mitzor. What does it mean, Hargasha? What does it mean? What does the word Hargasha mean? The Shulchan Aruch in the right hand says, "Aviu Mishat Tavish Boshen Neka Mivakoma Viyota Tamei Achapish Lo Yota Vechutz." See, the woman's body is a critical point, which is the dividing point. It's called the Bayis Achitzim and the Bayis Apnimi. Basically, if you know a little biology, the vaginal canal, which is the conduit between the uterus and the outside of the body. That's called the bayis achitzim. The uterus is called the bayis apnimi. The between air is called the cervical canal. The whole discussion in the post is exactly where you draw the line between the bayis achitzim and apnimi. Wherever the line is, at that split second, that's where the status of Nida occurs. And it's very likely that since Hargosha must accompany the onto the status of Nidus, that it's related to that moment in time. And that's relevant as we'll see in a moment. What is Hargosha? In the first Piskei Tshuva teaches us there are three kinds of Hargosha. One, Shenizdazdeya Tufa, that our body trembles, as the Rambam teaches us. What does that mean, that the body trembles? That's very often, you may have sometimes felt, to give a description of what a man should feel, that's not exactly the same. Maybe a little bit feverish. Maybe feel a little bit of a, or maybe a little bit nervous sometimes. You feel like a little kind of a tremor, a trembling in the body. This sometimes accompanies the onset of Nidus. It's Dadu Evarera. Number two, Niftach Makora. What does that mean? There's a feeling of an opening of the opening to the uterus. It gets dilated or just feel like it's opening up in the cervical area. That's number two. And the third, that's found in the Shulchan Aruch. The one is in the Rambam, one is in the Shulchan Aruch. The third is found in the Achronim, Tshuvas Achronim. What's called Margeshet Shedava La Zov Nimenet. She feels something wet is coming out. Is this considered Agosha or not? Oh. The Nodav Yehuda says yes, and the Chassam Sofer says no. Two Gedol Olam are finding it out, but this is a very important point. And that's to do with Pshat and Gemara. We're not going to go with the Gemara now. There's all discussion in the Gemara. Can a woman confuse the Hargosha of Meir Aglayim, of urine coming out, with the Hargosha of Nida? Yes or no? What does it mean? It's a whole complicated sugya in the Septuagint Nida, that's the Zion and the chest. That's what the truth centers around, which we're not going to go into. Suffice to say, there's a Pshara, a third view, in this respect, which is as follows. Yes, Zivas Nabalach can be considered a Hargosha, but it all depends where it fell. If it's felt internally, all the way in, at the point of the cervix, which is possibly the area which divides the base of Chitzim from base of Nimi, then it might constitute a Hargosha. However, if it's felt externally, in the vaginal canal area, then presumably would not be considered Hargosha. Why? Because even if it would be real dam, it's too late. That's already after the Nidus status has to have commenced. Just to give an example, if a woman feels the underwear is wet, something came out of the body, that's not called Agosha, that's already after the fact. So therefore the Chavazdat, the compromise view, said that the Agosha of Nivus of Alas, yes, something to worry about, but only if it's felt internal, not felt external. Can a woman tell one from the other? No. She thinks about it a lot, she usually can tell. What about the first two? Niftach Makor basically doesn't exist today, almost doesn't exist. And if Dazwe is that they are Gufa, it also, not always exist. Some person goes far to say, well, nowadays, there's no Hargosha. What does that mean? There's no longer a bit of Nida? There's no Hargosha? Nobody says that. Nobody said, I know. Nobody says that. Absolutely nobody. A woman has a regular period, everyone seems to agree from one to another, that has a status of Nida Doraita. Why? Either because that's considered Hargosha, even though she doesn't realize it, or that a regular, normal period which flows in a normal way is considered a Nida Doraita, even in the absence of Hargosha. That's a discussion which the post can have. I want to say what's not Hargosha. That's also important. Whenever we learn about Nida, it's important to know what is and what's not. What's not Hargosha? What's not Hargosha is something, for example, which exists very often as a early warning of the onset of Nida. For example, cramps. Very often a woman will have stomach cramps or other cramps in various parts of the body, which to her indicates that the Nida period is about to begin. That is called a Vesis Haguf, when it's called Vesis to Mitzvah for 2 weeks. That is not called Hargosha. Hargosha is something which comes at the time of the period, not something which should come before the period. Okay? It's something which I'm telling you clear, but I must also say that when I say clear, not everyone agrees with me. And there are various forms which many points that are not going to be in agreement with what I say. You may have a caller who hears different things in different caller classes. So you'll have to have what they call an American conference. But that is only to take place after a conference. Laws of Beinola Beinola have no business as topics of discussion between a chassid and a caller before the conference. Nothing to do with it. This whole matter should come up in any which way. Because it's the caller, we're giving us a good time for the wedding, and once the time is right, that's it. End of discussion. We'll enter the chassid. That's very important. And unfortunately, that's not always the case today. It can't be the case, but usually in a regular circumstance, it should be the case that there should be no discussion of matters before a chassid. Now, there are various forums, one of which I have in front of me, a very excellent paper called Bari HaShulchan, by a five of Cohen. A very beautiful, beautiful paper. And the poskim in the world say that the same which has a lot of chumras in it. All right, this is not such a terrible thing. But it is true that there are many other poskim who don't describe all the chumras who are written in that tape. Oh, okay. For me, it's not a good sefer, it's a beautiful sefer. Also, another sefer called, a very controversial sefer, the name is controversial, called the Mishnah Brura HaKadosh, Rabbi Volhandler from Williamsburg, or the typical Gufei Halachos. But he also called the Mishnah Brura HaKadosh. That's called the whole turmoil. How could you call it the Mishnah Brura? One Mishnah Brura. And it's a very good sefer anyway. It has two volumes out of three. The middle volume never came out, to my knowledge. I believe in the sefer Mishnah Brura, he disagreed with his board. I think he said that the cramp was considered a hargosha. That's my recollection. But I just don't think he's right. Okay. Now. Yeah. Fine. What is not considered Hagosha continues? A woman feels by Hagosha, the Shulchan Aruch says, I feel the Ross of the Tifa Sam Techardo, Yosheva Tal of Shimon Akim. We'll discuss Shimon Akim next week. What is the Tifa Sam Techardo? I mean, even the slightest amount of blood, this tiny little dot, is the requirement that she consider herself to be a Nisa with all the laws and regulations which pertain to a Nisa. This chumra of tifa sakachar only applies in a situation when there exists hargosha. When there is no hargosha, the halacha considers the whatever is found, or whether it be on a garment or on a tissue, etc., or any other material, in the category of what we call ketsem. A ketsem is a stain or a spot. A ketsem, which is a stain or a spot, has certain lineages, which we'll describe momentarily. The big shaila now, when a woman goes to the bathroom, and she is taught from her earliest childhood that when a woman goes to the bathroom, because of the biology of a woman, so she takes a tissue and she wipes around to make sure that the area is clean, she doesn't kind of show not infected, etc., for hygienic purposes. What happens if a woman on that hygienic swab, we'll call it, she discovers a drop of dye, tiny little drop, if we give it a status of a hargosha, will say that, of course, she's a fool of virus, she's prohibited. If it's not a hargosha, then she's mutter. So what's it in? So they'll say, what kind of hargosha? There was no hargosha. Her limbs weren't trembling, and she didn't feel an opening of the uterus, and there was no diva zavalach. Well, that's already a question. Because, you see, in this situation, there was a diva zavalach. What was it? She went to the bathroom. The question becomes, is that, are we afraid that perhaps she really felt the blood coming out, and she confused the blood with the urine. That's a big machlokas of the apostle. Many apostles are machmir. You have to be concerned with that. If a woman sees a ketsem right after she went to the bathroom, which is very common to see a ketsem, then, according to some, it's a serious problem. It's a serious problem. However, the Chazon Ish and others say, no, it's not a problem. Rav Moshe, the third sheet which you can find in the Rabbi Eidel Sefer. What the situation was when she went to the bathroom. A cold pun that most folks can say we can be making like the Chazon Ish, especially if she did not wipe herself the split second after she stopped the urinating. Usually it doesn't happen, usually she just waits a little bit of time, even with short amount of time, with some details perhaps on a different occasion. So therefore we assume, generally speaking, that it has a halachic status of a ketsem, and is not considered to be in the category of what we call a bidika. What is a bidika? One second. A bidika is an internal examination. Bidika is a positive and a negative sense. We'll discuss next week at great length and the week after. The halakhic part of the bidika is required. You have to do a bidika by inserting something internally into the deep into the vaginal canal and going around and around to make sure that no doubt is found for various reasons. But here, in our sense, the bidika would be a negative. We have an assumption. The woman does what we call a bidika, an internal examination. We have to be strict and give it the status of hargosha. Why do we give it the status of hargosha? So the simple reading is because if a woman does a bidika, she's pressing down on the sides of the area, and therefore there can be a possible confusion between what she feels she presses down and what might really be a hargosha. Perhaps that's the classical post would say. If you want to look at another good paper, the paper called Taharat Abayim from Avadi Yosef. She elaborates at some length about this idiom that I just said now. That's the reason why Badika is lo chamer in this context. If that's the case, the Pesukim say a external wife, Kama is unable to go to the bathroom, would not have the status of a
Bedik.
Moreover, we shall see later, that one of the reasons why we're lenient in the case of the Kesem, of the spot, is who said the spot comes from the uterus? Maybe the blood is coming from another source. It's probably possible if a woman just was an outside wife, that the same possibility exists. And therefore, we give it the status of the Kesem, not the status of a Re'ir Bahar Gosha, which we call today probably a Bedik. Question?
You just told her not to
work. Which kind of circumstance? Okay. A woman has no obligation to look at toilet tissue or to look at anything to try to find the Kesher. Once she finds it, she found it, okay. But there's no obligation as a rule to look for a Kesher. That is correct. That is correct. Okay. Now, what are the leniencies which are found with respect to a Kesher, to a spot or a stain? What's the difference? It's on the opponent. Well, one is this idea of tipas dam kechardo, a tiny little drop of blood, renders a woman to be a nida. It's only true by a situation of riyas dam argosha or bedik. It's not applied to a Kesher. What is the shear for a Kesher? The shear kegris. What is kegris? Approximately a penny. Dime. More than a cent. A penny or more, we have to worry about it. Less than a penny is of no concern. Where does the idea of a penny come from? Well, in the olden days when there was not such a good hygiene, there were bugs, little bugs that found their way into all parts of the areas surrounding the human body. And it's possible that these bugs are called macholas by the Gemara. Would leave a trace of blood, and therefore we never know for sure whether the blood was coming from the inner part of the woman's body or from some external bug. And as a result, because of the grist, we can assume maybe it came from a bug, and therefore we have a right to believe. The same as say we have no bug. So the answer is as follows. If you look carefully in the Gemara Masechta Nida, you'll find that these chumras of Kesamim originally were only introduced with respect to what we call taharos. What does taharos mean? We said before, tzilah v'tahara, ritual purity and impurity. With respect to that, the rabbis are more strict than with respect to Baal Isha. As a matter of fact, the Rif seems to have omitted all the laws of Tzalim, left it out as halakha, for the possible reason that he feels no din of Tzalim is man of death. We no longer have tzilah v'tahara. However, we pass in the Rif din of Tzalim. The reason for din of Tzalim is, there are no bugs anymore. We follow the rules and regulations. We have no right to assume, even in any conditions, that it came from something outside. For example, she's wearing tight-fitting underwear. It's hard to imagine that the relevant to Kaf Sofer, that he said that Poskim say that even in the circumstance where we have no right to assume, even in any condition, that it came from something outside. For example, she's wearing tight-fitting underwear. It's hard to imagine that the source of blood came from anywhere else but but internally. Nevertheless, we pass an halacha that the leniencies of a kesef exist. So to apply to the prototype, the leniency of kesef exists. If it's less than the size of a penny, even though it's red color, nevertheless, the woman is permissible to her husband. Now, be very careful. A woman has an instinct, a reflex. She sees a kesef, oh, let me now go do a bedik. Let me go check and see what's going on inside. Not necessary. Not a requirement. The fact that a woman should abstain does not require her to do it automatically to do a bedik. On the contrary, we tell her not to do a bedik. I must tell her that there are those who disagree with me at this point also. I'm aware of that. But that seems to be the halacha based on my understanding. A woman who sees the kesef is not required. She was never required to look for the kesef in the first place. As was noted. And if she sees the kesef, she's not required to look to see what's going on further in. It's not required. Not only that, but the Ramah was interested in women avoiding problems of stomach. She didn't think, it's a shortcut, it's a loophole. This is the week of loopholes, right? What's today's date? April 1? 10? So if it's a loophole, it's legal, so it's legal. So the Ramah says in Siman Kuf Sadi, which is a siman about stomach, the Erech of Anach and Sif Yud has another kula called Big Day Sivonin. If it's a colored garment, then even if it's the size of the kesef is more than the wrist, nevertheless the woman is Sahara. Says Ramah, trick. The Fichach Tildash or Isha Big Day Sivonin, Kedela Tila Mixonin. What's the Ramah and the Gemara? So Ramah says on the Pharaoh, there's nothing wrong with avoiding this problem. On the contrary, it's a recommended procedure. And therefore, it's recommended for a woman to wear colored undergarments at all times. It's recommended most times. And it's recommended for her not to look for the kesef, and she has a kesef, not to look beyond the kesef. Speaking of kulas, there's one more major kula by Trump. I found in the same sif. As a kesef and adama she'ena mekabel tumma. What's the logic of tumma? Very simple. Again, mana gemara of kesef are found on adama mekabel tumma. We had to render that object tame, ritual impurity. As I said before, once the object is rendered impure, obviously the woman has to be rendered impure, then she has to be rendered prohibited to her husband. It's all a chain. But if the object upon which it's found is ritually not mekabel tumah, so it cannot become tame, so therefore it remains tore despite the blood on it, because God needed the tame. It remains tore anyway, and therefore the woman remains tore anyway, and the woman remains muteris anyway. This is relevant in many areas. Big discussion about, for example, toilet tissue. Is toilet tissue mekabel tumah or not mekabel tumah? Some say it's mekabel, some say it's not mekabel. And many poskim are mekabel on toilet tissue, even if it's white, because after all, this kind of paper, which is tissue, thin paper, thrown out right away, is not mekabel tumah. A tribal cone of the famous chumrah. He says that even if he assumes, I think he does assume, that the tissue is not mekabel tumah, so a merchant of tshuva like that, Ramosh in his basis seems to say that if a woman has a cecum and a tissue is considered a kesef, it's name of a kabel tumah. But Rav Five of Thorns is not that one. Since the woman is holding the tissue, and the woman is a person of the kabel tumah, there's a whole long discussion. The person holding the tissue is the kabel tumah, so therefore, even though the tissue is not itself not the kabel tumah, so the law of tumah and tara would apply, and therefore, there's no cool of tumah. That's his psak. Most folks disagree. With Rav Moshe, that a toilet tissue which is used in the front of the kesem has the status of kesem and not of a bedika, and therefore we assume it's not a kabel tumah, and therefore it needs to put it no matter what. However, since it is controversial, Rav Moshe himself wasn't so excited to rely upon this by itself. I know this from his father, still to learn by him, when she was remembered neither. Therefore, it's very advisable that in the house there should always be colored tissues, a colored toilet tissue. A woman should use exclusively. That's it. Don't use white tissue or toilet tissue. You're only cause problems. Use color. Okay? Yes.
How come something is white and blue? Is that a different color?
we assume that even though it's light blue or yellow or pink, it's not black. It still has the status of a beged savua. Because why? Because the color, the original color, won't be exactly the same as it was in its on a white surface. There are some surfaces which they call they off white. Well, off white is not so off to me. That's why. I think it's a little bit dirty in this world. But if it's yellow, that's a different color. Different color. I had a shot just last week, so it was a yellow garment, and it was a yellow, was it white, but it wasn't. But don't use it. Use yellow, or use pink, or use blue. And then the garment, they use black. And they make black undergarments, which is very appropriate to be used in such a circumstance. Rav Moshe had a chumrah. I'm not sure if it's printed, but I know this Mifi HaShmua. Rav Moshe says that if it's a very large stain, then it's hard to treat it as a ketzer. It's so large. I mean, there could be a case. A woman has wearing an undergarment, and the entire undergarment could be red, the whole thing. But she didn't feel anything, nothing. She didn't realize it. She went to the bathroom, she opened it, pulls down the garment, and she's in the bathroom. She suddenly sees it's all stained with red, top to bottom. She's the same, well, look, doesn't matter. It's a colored garment, it's dark black, and there's no argosha. Rav Moshe was very hesitant to be made on such a case. It's a very large case. He felt that perhaps it came with argosha, he didn't realize it. Or maybe it's too big to be considered a kesem, etc., etc. So this is need a shayla by a competent rav to decide what to do in such a circumstance. Not so simple. Yes?
What about persuading when you have white toilet paper that has white
prints
on it?
Beautiful. Just don't buy it.
That would not be considered to be the movement that has like flowers.
Well, the flowers the movement, not the white part. You have to also get these flowers undergarments. Very nice. It's the luck of the draw. It falls on the flower, it's good. It falls on the white, it's ugly. So who wants to take the chance? Does it make sense? But there is a rule that a person is not required to look for something in the first place. You're not required to look anywhere. If you have you're not required to look at the rule. If you find something, then there's a major problem. Sometimes you cannot consider it to be a kesem. I'll give an example, which is you may view as a shocking example for me to give, but I feel it's important to give this example. We spoke before about the lack of argosha. So the many women, as I told you before, don't have argosha nowadays. They just they don't really feel too much. I want to add, before I get to my unusual example, there are women who always have argosha. It's constant discharge. Mucus and all kinds of things coming out. But many pastors say that when a woman feels all these discharges, what she could do is check herself three times. Maybe even before marriage, or right after marriage, any time. Check three times when you have these discharges, and they'll turn out to be clear, which they should be. They should be clear. And from that point on, she doesn't have to assume that that has the status of argosha. The status of argosha, we see this in many more formulas, but obviously it's been established as a type of argosha which is associated with a clear discharge. So therefore, it's hard to view it as a uniquely need-related argosha. I wanted to mention that. Very often it has no argosha at all, not even that kind of argosha, zero, zilch. So what's the problem? Well, you see, there is a concept, which a very sensitive concept, which is called contraception. Now, some of you may know that my opinion about contraception for a Chassid Kala. The answer is no, one word. Right? I'm vehemently against it for a Chassid Kala, this idea of contraception. Vehemently. However, later in life, after a child is born, the woman feels that she's too weak, many children are born, she's too weak to have another child, then, in my opinion, again, contraception is permissible under certain circumstances. Don't jump to any conclusions. Don't say, I said it's mutter, who's going to deny it? It has to be with a personal shayla, because the circumstances are always different. But let's say I have a case where the contraception is permissible. So there's a whole discussion of what kind of method should be used. I'm not going to go into that either, because it's not the topic of today. But one method which is sometimes used, that's relevant to today's discussion, is something which is called a diaphragm. A diaphragm is a device which is inserted by the woman internally all after the cervix, very close to the uterus, open. Sometimes you can have a situation where a diaphragm shows blood. Now, when I first had this shayla, years ago, I just started in Rabbanus, many years ago, I had somebody ask me this shayla. I mamash didn't know, I didn't know what a diaphragm was, you know, we were young and naive, I didn't know what the word meant. So I asked three Rabbanus. I got three different answers. One said usher, one said mutter, and then it was the centrist view. The centrist view was asked which star the diaphragm was found on. Without making a lot of sense. If it was on the outside, then it's very possible it came from a scratch when it was inserted, it wasn't inserted properly. If it came from the inside, then it likely came from internally, it's hard to attribute it to any bugs or to anything. It really goes right up against the opening, the cervical opening. And you have to be mindful, you can't give it a status of a ketzer pussy, made from a kabel tumah, it's made from rope or a plastic, however it's made from, it's not a kabel tumah. There are synthetics, like for example, synthetic undergarments. Called various garments that are not cotton, but they're made from polyester, things of this nature. It's synthetic when they're all pulsed with non-mechanical tumor. So there's similarly a diaphragm is very likely non-mechanical tumor. But this is Rob said, and that's the psak on Kalam Tin, basically, is that if it's so close, that's considered like a medika. Because that's considered impressed a little bit on the walls of the vaginal wall, so close up that you can't attribute it to any bumps, and you can't say there was no pressure, that's an equivalency of a bidika. Therefore, there's a serious problem. So, and I notice that it really exists in some cases if there's certain nursing, and here and there comes a drop of blood, etc. So my standing orders, how do you discover this? The way it works is that the next day, it's pulled out and it's washed off. So the standing order by me, for a woman who has to use this device, I'm not saying it's completely allowed to use it. No one is allowed to use it. The woman is asked to shada, the rough is allowed to use it. So then, the other methods are less halakhically problematic, even when there's contraception. So let's say, given an example, it has to be used. So the woman's given instructions. So if it's being pulled out, it's being washed, that procedure is done literally with your eyes closed. Literally. With your eyes closed. Closed. Finished. But if you open your eyes, you may see one tiny bit of dot, and that can make a cold dinner and need it for 2 weeks, who needs all this stuff? There's no requirement to look for dot. Sometimes it's a requirement, we'll see later. We'll discuss it in 2 weeks from now. But there's no requirement to be looking for dot all the time. So it should be done with the eyes closed. I know of a situation where there was a row who had a woman who kept asking him shyless, and she kept seeing the toilet tissue, which was neurotic and back and forth, and he kept telling her, don't look. Something that can't help itself. He passed me the psak, the halacha. She was required to take the light bulb out of the bathroom. So the room was dark. Psak halacha marav. Chosha marav, but a chosha with a very good psak. But I'm not required to look, and then you only make the thoris, and there's no need for us in this thing to transpire. Not necessary. Now, Is every last red spot red of a woman to be prohibited? No. The possibility which is called Dam Mata. That's discussed in Simon Kuf Pei Zion, especially in Sipei. What Dam Mata means from a wound. Very often a woman will have a wound in the external area surrounding that the Otsa Makom for a variety of reasons. Khalila yeast infection, which causes irritation and sometimes bleeding. It's a serious matter, which deserves the doctor's attention. And of course, the woman after childbirth can have certain bruises which could lead to damage. However, however the scratch or whatever wound or bruise evolve, it can cause bleeding. If we know for a fact that it's dam maka, it's not considered dam yidah, it's not even in the maka at all. The external, so it was called a bias, I think it was called a prosos process. That's nothing. It's like a bloody nose. It's nothing to do with needle at all. But a woman can't assume, I found out it's probably coming from a dam maka. That's absurd. We assume that the majority of the damage is not area comes from the minam maka. However, if we establish that there is a maka, and we know for a fact that's a maka, and we know for a fact that it will be called a maka shiyadua shemotzi dam, we know that this kind of a maka can cause bleeding. Then we have a right to attribute this blood to that particular matzah. That's what it's says in Shulchan Aruch, Simon Kuf, Pei, Zayin, Siv, Hey. And according to the Shulchan Aruch, the passion of a woman sees a shdam, she's muteres lebaila. Muteres lebaila. Doesn't matter what kind of sarf it is. Whatever is attributed to the maka, that maka is mutter. Very often a woman may scratch herself sometimes, washing herself, whatever, that could cause a bleeding. It's called a maka sheyadua shemotzi. Now you have to know for a fact that the maka is there. If she merely feels some pain or discomfort, then the pasuk says, it's not called a maka sheyadua, she don't know the maka at all. Maybe it's pain from something else, you don't know what it is. You have to go to a doctor to determine that there's dama to it. Maybe you're going to qualified nurse or midwife, more accessible, less expensive maybe, they can establish that there is a maka, and this maka in fact is a dua shemotzi dam, in which case it is permissible. If it's we know for a fact as a maka, but we're not 100, we're not sure this type of maka is motzi dam, so then there's a distinction as far as which time of the month is concerned. And we talk about the time of the month when she's expecting a period and when she's not expecting a period, assuming that she has some kind of regularity. Not expecting a period for a certain amount of time, we can be lenient even in the case of the maka, which is not quote your dua shemotzi dam. It's doubtful. We don't know. Not that we don't know about the maka. We know the maka. We're not sure if the maka would cause bleeding. If it's however a case, if she is expecting a period, or to put this way, we can't give a guarantee that she's not expecting a period, so we have to be master unless we know for a fact that the maka she has dua shemotzi dam, which we can be making even then. Unless, of course, a lot of dam. The period, you can't say, oh, she'll never be an either. Great. Give yourself a scratch and say, oh, I've never needed for life, and I'll always attribute to the market. That's absurd. So you the whole of those here the post and say. So when the vessel comes, then especially if you see a physical manifestation, then of course she's Asura Labar. The woman didn't see that, but she just had a keter. The Pitzke Shuvah over here in Simon Kuf Tzadi. Steve Cotton. Shuvah Simon Kuf Tzadi towards the end seems to indicate that seems to indicate that as far as the kesem is concerned, the woman didn't have a riyah dam. She just had a kesem, then perhaps she could be makel that told of the maka, even if it's is this what we call ke'ev, which is pain. The pain alone is not enough to be matter a dam of a riyah dam, a bedika dam, a regular, normal damage of the shadow of the rice. But for a kesem, which we're making many things anyway, perhaps it can be told even in a maka, which is not, even if a ke'ev, which indicates it's a maka. Now, there are other indications to prove that something is a maka and it's not another source of dam. For example, maybe if something, yes? Yeah. Well, she shouldn't, but that could cause, could again cause bleeding. So what are you doing? Bad medicine. So just, you go buy fancy tissue, color, and pay the extra money. So if it's two coarse, you use regular tissues. Each individual tissue is separate. Now, the halacha is that there could be, we could have a right to try to do some investigative detective work to find out something is a kesem, is coming from a maka or coming from the minamokim. This is an example that's found in the Shulchan Aruch. It's in the kuf tzadi aleph, a woman who urinates and finds dam, it's coming from the urinary tract infection, which certainly can lead to dam. So you put in some kind of a mok, and you see if the dam is from the side, not from the side, you know, you can do a certain investigative efforts which can be made. And some of that that's in fact true is in terms of what they call a tampon, something else. The dam is always found only on the side, never on top. This is a certain circumstance to be a proof positive that in fact it's a dam min hamakla, not dam min hamok. But again, it requires the supervision of a rabbi. Don't try to do it yourself. But there are methods of trying to establish this fact. one point on the Kuda before we stop. I like to start on time and stop on time. We started late, so stop a little bit later. And that is, what full Dam Nida is only if it's red.
Red?
However, if it's reddish, it's also a problem. We have reddish. Yellow is not considered reddish. Brown, a different kind of brown. It's reddish brown and it's non-reddish brown. If it's beige, it's nothing to do with red, it's really not a problem. If it's regular brown, you have to be very careful to make sure that it's not what we call possible notella ad mubis. We found in the Pesachim Tshuva at the beginning of Simon Kuf Pechet, which talks about Maradam. That requires, again, a shadow by rough to see if it's red highlights in the brown, if it's red streaks in the brown, or if it's plain brown. That requires some experience. But once again, I want to just end by saying, we don't say, oh, I'll be machmir. What do I need it for? Just wait another day, and another day, and another day, and another day. That's not right. If it's a shayla, then a rav should be consulted. And if you don't trust any rav, you're embarrassed, send it in a mail to some rav. Put your social security number on it. It's like they're happy about the registration, put your social security number on it. And you say, call them up, say, I'm social security number, such, 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 and such. What's the status of this cat which I showed you? It was a physique or whatever it may be. It's something which is, if you feel that tremendous level of sneers, which is okay, then you should still ask the shayla. You know, so you can ask the shayla by the local rabbi who knows you and knows the circumstances even better. Either the woman comes to ask the shayla by the rabbi or the husband brings the shayla. Again, it's all after marriage, as I described before. Not before, but yes, sir.
A person wanted our article.
Depends, I have to look at every each and every thing.
That's
right. There's a rule when it comes to Mara's Dam, which goes as follows. The Apostle Paul is to say this. Ein l'dayin l'masha ein avros. Which means the judge, the rabbinical deciser, only has what he sees. He can't talk to project to backwards in time. Very often a rabbi may ask a woman, a child, listen, when you saw that, I guess it's 3 days later. See, it's brown, but he has a funny suspicion that it could have been red at anything and now it's brown. So we'll often ask the woman, wait a minute, when you saw this originally, was it actually really red or not? And she said, yes, it was really red. We would just send it to you, and I thought, maybe, it'll fade in 3 days, so then you'll see all this. But then, of course, you have to pass. And it's awesome. But she said originally, no, it wasn't red. I wasn't sure. It was brown. I wasn't sure. Then the general rule is that the world will look at it based on what it is. Very often, if you look at it in the light, in the daylight, especially in the sunlight, if it was once red, even a few days ago, what we call the red highlight will come out. That's what's called those of movies. When we look at daylight as opposed to other light. Post can say, if you look at the fluorescent light, that's the closest approximation we have to daylight. It's better than the incandescent light. So we can do that if we have to. It's better to look at the daylight than, that's the better thing to do. But each one has his own way of looking at things, in the literal sense. So you have to ask the rabbi if you have confidence in it, he should pass the shadow for you.
She only asks the rabbi, she doesn't look. She
uses
everything she gets, she'll
look
to the rabbi.
Every rabbi has to
answer,
I can't answer that question.
Is it bigger to look at
her when she likes before? The rabbi has to answer that child for the woman. She has to ask him, and he will give her the answer. We'll stop here, but next week we'll discuss how a woman who was already a nida. Last week we spoke about how a woman becomes a nida. I neglected to mention the time up there. I don't mention it to Mar McCormick. The yeshiva put out something which from the shir which we gave once in the summertime after Mar Mekarmis written something. She typed it up in 4 pages based on the Torah I mentioned to you last week, five in the class was from there was the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, but also the and the Aruch HaShulchan and the Chazanish and the Sidrei Torah, which is in the back. I'm looking at the Pesachei Tshuvos at the bottom, the Reb Moshe's Tshuvos, the Igros Moshe. Also has some of this new Svarim I mentioned to you last week, which we use, the Bali HaShulchan, which I have in front of me, and I launched this paper called Mishnah Brura, or by Ballhandler, which is a Chassidish version of a modern contemporary work. So you have all kinds of Yeshivish and Chassidish, and all kinds of other things are in here, and if anyone wants a copy, I have a copy here, you can get one for yourself. Make a copy. So we spoke last week about how a woman becomes a nida, And this week we have to say, discuss how a woman becomes oisnida, how she, once she is in the status of nida, how she becomes Torah, which is very appropriate, because if you paid attention to yesterday's parsha, if you were in shul yesterday, you learned that, in fact, what we're discussing today is really what we spoke about at the end of yesterday's parsha. There's a nida and there's a zava. If you look, just better pay attention to the psukim, look inside. What is a nida? A nida is a woman who sees regularly, and she heard in midoraisa is that she sees 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days, makes no difference. In any event, as long as she's clean by day 7, she goes to the mikvah the night of the, after the 7 days, the 8th night, instead of a nida midoraisa. A zava, which we read about yesterday's parasha, below es nidasa, she's at a time when she's not supposed to see women, however you define supposed to see. The minimum cycle recognized by the Torah is 18 days. The last sugim is Tachmanida. Basically, either Ramsukim or Analacha Moshe Misinai. There's possible differences. The Nativ explains in his parish in the Gemara there. The Dhamma Shasim, days 8 through 18, is called below Es Nidasa. And there's a different din. The different din. The din is, if you see three days in a row, within that span from 8 to 18, she becomes what we call a Zava Gadola, a Zava, and she's required Shiva Nikim, 7 clean days, and then even a Korban with Mansha Beis HaMikdash Ha'Yerkayim. So, most women, those who have a regular, semi-regular period, which we'll discuss the details of next week, from our Vestas, have a status with the rights of a Nidah. And therefore, there's no need for Shiva Nikim, it may be Din Torah, sufficient that they have 7 days altogether. Most women also, I've done less than 7 days, most women. So therefore, okay. So out of the full month, of the, assuming the period comes approximately once a month, which we'll also discuss next week. So, all right. So 3 weeks on and 1 week off. Not so bad. Came along Chazal. Actually, not Chazal. Don't blame the Chazal for this one. We don't have only the themselves to blame. B'nos Yisrael Echmir Walatma. Shafilu Roash Tipa Santa Chayro. Yoshem Salam Shivin Akim. But no matter what, they require 7 clean days. Even though it's only a nida, it's not a zava. Chazal were afraid, or the women were afraid, that they would get confused, a nida, a zava, this, that, the other thing. So therefore they require, in any event, 7 clean days. And that's a chumrah. Now, we're talking about a minimum of 7 clean days. Because most women see down, that give a number 5 days approximately. So therefore, you're not talking about a total of 7 days per month. We're talking about a total of 7 plus whatever time she sees, which is approximately 5 days, has a total of 7 plus 5 equals 12. Now you're up there 12 days off out of a month. That's already a higher percentage. So, kachazem. You may say, well, but there's a woman who's an ilui. She manages to have the entire period packed into 3 days. So then she'll say, okay, so for her, it's enough time 3 days plus the 7, and it should be a total of 10 days altogether. Well, in theory, that would be correct. However, the Ramah says no. Why not? Because there exists another din. The din of Poleta Shechazer, which you also read about yesterday's parsha. That a woman who lives with a man, so that she becomes Tamea. But the truth of the matter is that the better source for the din is what we read a long time ago in Parshas Yisro. For the Shlosh Tamea Tabola, Al Tikshu El Isha. It was 3 days before Matzah Torah, the men and women couldn't live with each other. Why? So the Gemara Masechta Shabbos explained, the man is no problem, he goes to the Mikveh Torah in the end. The woman is always the problem. The woman is she can't just go to the Mikveh, because we're afraid to be what we call a poletes. Poletes means that the zera will come out of her body. As the zera comes out of the body, then she also has the status of a balas carry, which is inappropriate to come balas the Torah. It's also, it would not count for the 7 clean days. And therefore, you have to have a total of, have to wait until the zera is no longer potent. Once the zera can no longer impregnate a woman, then it's considered this time, it's some other body fluid. And the zera poleta zera would not apply. How long does it take for that to happen? But the machlokas, the doctors and the machlokas, they're abonim. They both have a machlokas. The Chazal have different opinions ranging from 36 hours to 72 hours, there's a few in between. So the doctors have similar machlokas. Bottom line, we're machmer. Right? The Shlosh Jamim, there's 3 days of Hagbola means three full days of 72 hours. Okay, so let's say, so what's the difference? We just said before, a woman almost never sees less than 3 days. Here 3 days, there 3 days. What's the difference? See, 2 days, it almost never happens. Could happen, or we called last week a kesef. The woman can see in the middle of nowhere, just a kesef, which she renders her in the tome, then it would make a much bigger difference until you start counting. But in the average period, since the last 3 days, well, the answer is that three is not three. Because 3 days here is 72 hours. 72 hours, by definition, is 4 days. I mean, you figure it out. You don't know exactly when the day begins and ends. Exactly as Shkia says, the prophet of the Santa. So by definition, three full days would be 4 days on the calendar. So you'd not be only be able to count the Shiva Nakim starting from the fifth day. Now, of course, this would only apply in a situation in which there was Tashmish just before the onset of the period. That's the secret right there. That's how the Shulchan Aruch says. If Yosef Kara passes away, any spy in the mineral? Maybe spy in the mineral? Not even for this. So if the spies then perhaps have a mini that can follow that, I don't know. I'm not an expert in what their customs are. But there are more added two chumras. The first chumra that I'm on was a low plug, which means even though the husband and wife were not together anyway for a long time before the period began, nevertheless, you have to wait the 3 days, so it would translate into 4 days. Because of a low plug, you'll say this woman has relations to this woman. Didn't have relations. It's again the same idea of low plug, which you find in the Gemara, the Gnosis Rav. It's extended again by the Ramah. But then he adds the whopper, the kicker. He says, you know, there are mistakes. A woman that make a mistake by being a shmoshes. Is this day, is this night that she's going to make to be one by another? So we threw in another day. Now you're not talking about 3 plus 7, which was always impossible because of the imprecision factor. Now you have to add 4 plus 7, which is the way which the Shulchan Aruch was in a case where there was Tashmish. And there are more two things. A, it's also even if there's no Tashmish, and B, it's 5 plus 7. The truth to tell, and for most women, makes no difference. Because most women cannot get a clean Hefsek Tara anyway until the fifth day. And since we have to have Shiva Nakim, I use an expression which I shouldn't have used yet. Hefsek Tara, I haven't gotten to that yet. We'll explain what it means in a minute. But she can't be, she won't be clean until the end of 5 days anyway. So it doesn't really matter these extra chumras. Again, for the normal situation of a regular period. Yes?
The 3 days, which are really 5 days,
right,
are part of the.
No, the 5 days when she's seeing down. As I explained a minute ago, this 5 days is irrelevant in most cases because she's seeing down anyway. Yes, sir.
What about a kesef?
What about a kesef?
Yes. And how come after a wedding, the Gemara says that the Kamasulah is 4 plus
7? Correct, we'll get to that.
We call the blood flow, so why?
Oh, very good. So we'll get to it, Mr. Shem, in 2 weeks. That's the way that we're supposed to talk about that. Chazal Badaf, the one that showed us Kamasulah is different. So we'll come to that, Mr. Shem. Okay, any questions? I wanted to repeat again what I mentioned to you last week. Lo habay shalomay, especially in matters of business. If you have any question, ask, and if you don't want to answer in front of the whole oilam, you can answer me afterwards. I'm happy to try to answer you on a private basis as well. Okay, let's now discuss that concept called Hefsek Tara. The simon we're discussing today is simon Kuf Tzadi Vov. Hefsek Tara. So the Shulchan Aruch says in simon Kuf Tzadi Vov, which is the simon about how a woman who was an Ida becomes an Isha Tahora. How is it done? Shivas Yomim Shazavas Oferes Maschilim Imochas Yom Shaposkabo. Imochas Yom Shaposkabo is not a joke. I must tell you a story about this. The stories are very illustrating, and they, you know, knock things into your head better than just learning dinim. I had a case of a situation of a man who was married for a second time. The woman was married for a second time. She was an almona. And she was, had a question about Dominique. And all of a sudden, the man whom I knew called up and said, can you explain to me, Rabbi, what's the one more time about the Shiva Nakim? So I explained to him what it is. That's what I thought. I said, well, why do you ask the question? He says, well, my wife told me that throughout her married life, she was married previously, and her husband had passed away, and they had children, etc., etc. She was under the impression, a very interesting impression, that if a woman sees dam and requires seven clean dates, that the day when she makes the hefta kara, which was, could have been unclean in the morning or the night before, and she made hefta kara, counts for the first of the shiva nikiyim. I said she must have been taught by a kusi. So the gemara doesn't accept either that the kusim held that way. That the shiva nikiyim can begin in the, you know, it's a difference. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not kusi, so it counts already. No, it's the yomkakula, why not? So the shulchan aruch was not a kusi, and therefore he says, shiva yom mishazavas hoferes, maskulim imachvat yom shafat gabo. The gemara makes a reference to the tosfos in the Sefer Neidah. So I just want to point that out. You know, people can make mistakes. This is one that this mistake really happened. No one was looking back for 20 years, and what can I say? The only saving grace is, I assume she had a regular period, that the din of Shiva Nakim is with the Rabbonah. He should be known to have a lot, so therefore was no, Khalid was no Yisakari, and this is the Rabbonah B'Shoigeg. We spoke about that, all right, after the fact. But certainly that we don't advocate following the opinion of the Kusoyim. Therefore, the Mechaber said that the first called the Shiva Nakim, and after the day after the dam stopped, and the Shulchan Aruch goes on, the Kaf Mishpata in Tirabeis Yomim Al Gimel Lepaska Milirot. I guess in the time of the Shulchan Aruch, maybe they had fast the period. They're just giving example 2 or 3 days. So Bodekas Biyom Shapaska Gadesh Tisak Betara. It's a question of Hefsek Tara. Actually, the Gemara is called that Rosha Betara. We call it Hefsek Tara. Ubedika Zutia Samach Leben Hashmoshes. This bedika should be done ideally close to Ben Hashemosh, before Shkia. Another thing I want to tell you about. In some Hasidic places, they do have Sektara after the Shkia. This is the old food of Rabbeinu Tam, which spoke about in the Pesachim this year, came up a few times. And I once saw one of the Sfarim, these crazy Litvisher Rabbanim, they tell women if they don't do Sektara before the Shkia, it's no good. Whoever heard of this in the Alta Haim was never that way. Okay, that's the Alta Haim. But for us, we follow Shinas Agra. And therefore, the Hefsek must be done before Shkia. The Rav Moshe, Zechatarik Lefarocha, has this wild idea that if you have a grace period, and the grace period, I think, is 8 or 9 minutes, and the grace period is based on sex vega. What's the sex vega? Sofek yom, finish mosh, tova sofek yom, sofek laila. And we know the machlok is the gong of the Rabbeinu Tam when the laila begins. So according to the Rabbeinu Tam, the laila doesn't begin until an hour from now. So it's a double, 2 seconds, it's probably yom. So where do you get 9 minutes? It should really be 13 minutes, right? We learned the sugya 3 quarters. Well, Rav Moshe says, look, he looked out the balcony and in the FDR drive, and he saw it start after 50 minutes, even though it says in the Gemara only after 72 minutes, somebody's going to get compressed. So the ratio of 50 to 72 is the ratio of 8 or 9 to 13 and a half. That's a new mathematics for Rav Moshe Zechatarik Lefarocha. Okay. So both of his assumptions are extremely questionable. The idea that he can make Ben Hashemosh shorter because we see stars coming out earlier, so can I get a Gemara? The Gemara says himself, and I've got Milan. But the Minchas Kohen asked that question. The Minchas Kohen said, well, look, we live in Amsterdam, he said. So obviously in Amsterdam, it takes shorter for the stars to come out than it takes in Yerushalayim. You can only say that if you haven't been in Yerushalayim, because if you don't have been in Yerushalayim, you know it's a carrot. The stars get dark much more quickly. The Vilna goal, well, he was in Vilna, he figured it out. He has a whole different sheet of spoke about it on a different occasion. I'll call Pashat number one, Shverevar. So if you see 3 stars, after 50 minutes, it's good according to many times. Pashat is not that way. Pashat is, it takes 70 to maybe even 90 minutes. You see stars, go to push Makish. From the dog's Kasha, the answer is the answer. From the Kasha Starkman, there's an answer to every Kasha. The answer is given in a table called Oros Chayim, based on the Rav Yo. If you look in the west, don't look up straight ahead. Of course, you have to look in the west. The same way you have to look for the Shkia, you have to look into the west. So for the Tate, look straight to west. It'll take you a long time. It takes 90 minutes in Yerushalayim to actually find 3 stars in the west. There's always something about Reb Chaim Druk in the Tate. I call upon that now. We're not discussing Shkia and Ben Hashemosh now. It's not a topic. I just want to mention the task. And number two, yes?
First of all, before the mention of watches, they just look at the sky. They can see what
he does. Good. Now,
also, I think we spoke about
No.
Now, what they want,
try
to like the
Brahma, because
the
Honeys
happen.
You can't rely on it at all. Khalil to rely on it. Because then you'll be able to make yourself to Michal Shabbos.
You need to be sure about
that. Sure,
that would
have been
on the first
part.
That's
cheer. What? Change shoes. That's all. The second point is as follows. The idea of the Svek Svek of Rav Moshe is also very severe. As the post already pointed out, one of the Chassidish Sforim asked against Rav Moshe as a matter of fact. It's a svek svek of the target of the tatra. So you have svek svek for the Bein HaShemosh to put the Vilna Gaon. You have a svek svek of the Rabbein Natan. You put the two svekas together, it'll be no longer the Bein HaShemosh. So therefore, you'll knock the whole thing out. That's the Mavakam. You can't do that. So I call by Rav Moshe the Shvera, but I wouldn't rely on it at all. The absolute Shia, and that's it. The only time he might, we was tired of the sniff, often you find this case when it's Iyash or the Samta. My clock says 7:36, and the Shkia in the New York Times says 7:36. And I checked my watch with the radio, and it's exactly the same, but I don't know, 7:36 in certain seconds, and this and that, and the Iyash or the Samta. So even there, I would go to Chumra. Because what kind of business? Why is playing it so close? You should do it earlier. But all right, then there's maybe ground if it's the Iyash or the Samta. Always has to be that margin. Impossible to really be so precise. It should be done earlier. Not only that, but I always follow the Ramo. The Ramo says, the Chathila, with the Yevet, even a morning Vizika suffices. So, although the Mechaber does have a... caveat, Sivbeis, Ross and Yomecha B'Vad, then it must be done after with Moch Tochuk, and after The Mechavin Sefalah is the only Milamed Adam Mesoch Beso, the Hakam of the Chathila throws in the Ramah, Shnei Bodekas Biyom Efsik Tar B'Moch Dochuk, Mashiach Shem Kol Ben Hashmosh. So Abdika Moshe says, what's Moch Dochuk? It means if something is inserted into the body and it's left there for the entire Ben Hashmosh period, whatever that may be, 13 minutes, be it 90 minutes, or everything, anything in between, 144 minutes, according to some Svaros, if you want to be Machman on all sides. Anyway, and it should be left there, and that's the best thing to do. L'chatchila, not required. When it comes to Ross or Yom Echa, do this thing at work, you get involved in your business, whatever you're doing, you forget. So it's always better to be done in the morning if possible. Of course, you may open the day five in the morning, it's not clean yet, all right? So, not clean, so you try to do it later in the day. But it's always better to try to do it earlier because in case you're going to forget and then all of a sudden you find that you get stuck on the subway. I have all kinds of cases. I got stuck on a car. I did a hefsek in the back of a car. I did a hefsek in the subway. No one did a hefsek. No.